We have over against the wall there two baskets. One says SBMG Donna, and the other says Teacher Donna. And those are there to allow you to support the Sangha, help us pay the bills, and help us, continue on. So I would encourage you to support that. The teacher, Donna, tonight.
I would love for the teacher, Donna, to go to the David Samuel Orr Fund. So, and I could just say a little bit more about that after the meditation.
Okay, great. So our meeting tonight's a little different. In our advertising, early advertising, we had Susan Orr was going to be the teacher. And because of illness, she's not able to attend tonight. But we're going to have the meeting, and Andy's going to help lead it, kind of talking about what Susan's path has been these last few months through difficult illness. And so I think it's going to be really a wonderful opportunity. And people will have an opportunity to stand and give testimony or, talk at the conclusion about how Susan has influenced their lives or had been in contact with them. So we're going to leave plenty of time for that. Just to let you know, Susan is a member of SBMG for over 20 years. She is a graduate of the Spirit Rock Dedicated Practitioners Program and Community Dharma Leaders Program. She completed certification as a Radiant Heart Qigong teacher with Roshi Teja Bell. While she worked with a number of teachers in different traditions, her main practice has been Vipassana. Her teacher is James Barras. She's a founding member and recently retired president of the Sacramento Dharma Center. It's also on the board of the SBMG over time. And she co-founded the Sacramento Climate Sangha and offered much individual practice mentoring, as well as many classes at SBMG. And I have to say, as when I first came to SBMG, I took beginning meditation from Susan, and it was a wonderful class and did me a lot of good. Andy Bean has been with our Sangha. He's a member of our Caring Council, and he's going to lead our discussion tonight.
And I will do everything I can to bring Susan's radiant heart into this room, as well as her life lessons. So I very much appreciate that you're here tonight. We all belong here. So whether you know Susan deeply or you don't have any idea who she is, we have a number of people who are fairly new here, or you haven't seen her in this past year very much. You belong here. We're going to be talking about the life and lessons of a beautiful person who really lived her path and lived Buddhism, and really made it accessible for all of us. So I hope that everybody feels a place. And this will be our break time for 5 minutes. Is that right?
Come back to the bell.
And we'll come back at the bell. Thank you. Life takes some interesting and unpredictable turns. A few days ago, I was speaking with Susan about things that she would end up saying at this talk, and trying to sort out with her what made sense to cover, what didn't make sense. And then within a couple of days, it became apparent that she would not be able to give this talk. And then just yesterday getting kind of a little bit out of her from, not like I was pulling it out, but she really wanted to come out of herself and pass on some words of wisdom and elements that she was going to bring to us right from the beginning. And at this point, I know people have different levels of knowledge about her health situation, but at this point, she's put it, I'd like to get you the actual words. She said, the body is done. She's really done fighting and done with treatments and that sort of path that she had been on for so much of her life with different bouts of cancer. She has very deep gratitude for our group, for Buddhism, for all of you. There's never a message that goes by where she doesn't mention her love for people. She just started with the idea that she was dying, I think, just a couple weeks ago, and started looking at Stephen Levine's book. And she said, Stephen Levine just keeps talking about a healing circle, that you really need to have a healing circle. And she said, I have that. It's so wonderful. I have that healing circle. Also mentioned how she's not afraid of dying. That, I think, hasn't always been the case, just knowing her, but that certainly is where she has gone in the last period of time. And I think in this process, and not to get into, all the different details, but in all of the time that she had been taken care of so well by so many people in this room, by her family members, by her extended community, she began to, at first I think she felt kind of modest about all the help she was getting, maybe felt a little bit guilty about the help, maybe felt that she didn't deserve the help. And then over time, really began to not only appreciate everyone's help, but feel that part of her generosity was about allowing people to help her, that was a generous act. And I think that even evolved to the point where she really had the sense that who she was, there was no sense of I'm feeling really proud of myself because, man, all these people just love me so much and they're wanting to give me all this help. So not so much a sense of that kind of pride, not so much a sense of what did I do to deserve this, but really a deep felt sense of I'm just a receptacle for the lessons, the love, the community. And there really isn't anything particularly special about me. I'm just a product of all the experiences, all the people I've ever run into, all the teachings that I've ever received, all the graciousness and love of the community. So it made receiving help just like, I'm not really that special. If people want to give me help, that sounds really wonderful. There's a couple of poems that Susan imagined being at the core of this talk. So I wanted to get you those poems. My hope is that you don't start looking up the poems online. They are really available because she wasn't able to produce them in the hospital at the moment. I found them online in a second, and I'm a doofus, and if I could find them online, you'll be able to find them online, I guarantee it. The first poem is by William Stafford, who many of you know, and it's entitled The Way It Is. And I'd like to recite the poem to you, and then we could just talk about it a little bit. There's another poem that I also would like to recite to you from Mary Oliver, and I just want to say when probably the last spark that I saw from Susan, and she really, even yesterday, was barely able to speak. She said, with the Mary Oliver poem, she said, "This is me. This is me." So that's the one we're going to save for a little bit. So the William Stafford poem, "The Way It Is." There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it is hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. So I'll just read it again. There's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it's hard for others to see. While you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die. And you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding. You don't ever let go of the thread. So, when I thought of the thread and I thought of Susan's thread, I thought of just her tenderheartedness, and which is so much about, to me, the way she manifested Buddhism, her tenderheartedness. And that tender heart was, to me, always about seeking the truth, being courageous and steadfast, and connecting with love. It is really courageous to maintain that tender heart, because we connect with people and we realize that people have pain, and life is not that predictable. We're open, we're courageous, we're open, we're curious, we're able to take in love and the world as it is with all its suffering. There's incredible benefits of the tender heart, and there's the courage that it takes to maintain that tender heart, because when we keep that heart open and we really stay curious, we learn of people's pain and difficulties. And that tender heart was always to me about her love for so many people, so many different kinds of people. She maintained curiosity with people I remember she talked about a couple people who had some really, for me, pretty extreme political views, and she just wanted to love them up and learn who they were and what they were about. And, you know, in the poem it says you have to explain about the thread. And I think of explaining kind of that literal way of explaining, right? You have to tell people what is that thread you're hanging on to. And Susan, I feel like has not, I'm sorry, sometimes I realize I use the past, I'm going to use the present, and on a certain level that naturally makes sense, you know, who she is in her essence, or not her essence, but who we imagine her to be is not going to return. So when I talk about her and I talk about how I imagine her showing up at meetings, showing up in these halls with that bright, beautiful face and open heart and willingness to listen and curiosity, that person in that physical form is not going to be available to us. So I naturally lapse into sometimes talking about her as if her life is in the past. But you have to explain about the thread. She didn't have to explain about the thread. You felt the thread from Susan. You just felt the way she showed up. It was always about love. It was always about understanding, patience. And at the same time, the thread was also about just an amazing steadfastness. Just a kind of strength that in the middle of sometimes diverse opinions and some people being a lot louder than she was capable of being, you know, physically louder for people who don't know her, especially as she moved on in years, she became kind of more and more petite and her voice cracked more and more and it was harder, more and more difficult for her to get the words out of her mouth. And yet she just had this amazing strength, right? She was just such a force despite what she looked like on some level on the surface. So the thread was about just how she showed up with that ongoing love and steadfastness, commitment for people to be heard, just a deep faith in the process of being compassionate with others. And you felt that thread, whether she was involved, whether family members felt that thread, people who she mentored in Buddhism felt that thread, people at different meetings experienced that thread, people in the community felt that thread. I was listening to Joe's introduction of Susan, and I thought, that's like one tiny little fraction of all the amazing things that she has done. I mean, chalk it up. She was the founder of that, for some of you that maybe don't know. She developed this foundation, which I'll get into a little bit more, the David Orr Foundation. Just, you know, she was involved in refugee work. She did artwork with trauma victims. I come from an orientation in the world of academia where people are constantly talking about all the things they do, and you know that they really haven't done like one-tenth of them. They maybe showed up at one meeting like in 3 years and they've given themselves all kinds of credit. And she's just, you know, that introduction doesn't like scratch the surface. And when she was involved in something, she was involved in it. She was involved in it. So the thread was how she showed up with all the different people. And of course, the development and leading not only of the development of Chalk It Up, but of the Dharma Center, right? So much of our being able to sit here today has to do with her tireless effort in bringing people together, going through all kinds of meetings, talking about things that at times she maybe thought were minutiae, but she just kind of stayed in there. Dealing with different personalities, and there she was. You could always count on her to show up with that thread, with that strength, with that heart. She then became part of developing the Caring Council, a group of people that, and now it's being replicated or one way or another duplicated in other Dharma groups in Sacramento. So the group of people that can address different challenges that come up for Sangha members, classes, board meetings. That's how she would show up. So just to look at a couple lines, and then I'd like to hear from some of you and how you show up with your thread. Because really the idea in which you wanted out of this talk more than anything was not so much an opportunity to reminisce or be nostalgic, but to really take lessons forward. So within the poem, it says, while you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen. People get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. While you hold it, you can't get lost, even in the midst of those tragedies. The tragedy that I think of that really defined her life, and she, you know, in Buddhism, as you know, we talk about how the truth of suffering, so we really, it's really about facing the reality of suffering, not running from suffering, facing the reality of suffering. And Susan integrated the reality and the lessons from suffering, and it just made her heart grow bigger and made her more capable of connecting with so many different people. And the suffering that I think about when I think of Susan's life, and some of you know this story with more depth, or and some of you don't, but her son, as many of you know, suffered from schizophrenia and ended up dying at a very young age, about 20 years old. And for about 10 years, she did not know what had happened to him. He basically, as far as they knew from the mental hospital that he was, that he had left, he had just disappeared. So her life was not only about losing this just beautiful soul, and when I hear her describe him, I just had the sense of this just, you know, beacon of light, intelligent, thoughtful, artistic, compassionate, empathic, really cut down by mental illness, and then disappearing for years. No closure. And finally, years and years and years later, having the closure that he had been hit by a train. Maybe it was suicide, maybe it wasn't, really difficult to know. So, and what did she do with that experience? Developed the David Orr Foundation, which serves groups, grassroots groups doing environmental work and doing work with First Nations people, Native American people, and community organizing within the Native American community. So just, one of those core examples, something that she rarely talked about for years and years. And even incorporated the suffering to the extent where she, there are consistent cues around town of his presence just by sounds or, physical things that she saw in the community. And after a while, kind of converting that triggering experience, that kind of PTSD traumatic experience, into this is a mindfulness bell of David's presence. This is just, oh, there's David again. That example of living with suffering rather than, and being able to translate suffering into an open-heartedness and a love. So part of the poem also says, you don't ever let go of the thread. And to me, that's about the way she just lived her practice. She lived Buddhist principles. She found one form or another to practice, whether it was through meditation, then going to Spirit Rock's dedicated practitioners program, and then transmitting those lessons, setting up a Wednesday morning group in Curtis Park. One way or another, living that practice, never letting go of the thread, and living it formally through those kinds of practices, but also just, again, in the way she just dealt with people. At different times, some of you saw her in the hospital, and I would always be struck by the way she talked to staff at the hospital. Always, you know, with so much graciousness, so much appreciation, making sure she knew people by their names and speaking with them with this kind of love and appreciation of, I'm really glad you're here. Thank you so much for doing that for me. That was, to me, was her not letting go of the thread. So on the relative sense, we have a sense of these teachings or the thread being something that we hold on to, like it says in the poem. But essentially, the thread is Susan. You know, the thread is there. And also, essentially, the thread is us. We've had this opportunity to share in her life, and even if, again, if you've never met her before, you're sharing in her life at this moment. The thread seems like it's available, you know. The thread is available. And in that absolute sense, we really engage in practices, or we engage in some of the things that we do in Buddhism, at least in my view, is reading that poem to really just keep us connected to the thread. Sometimes we lose the thread because there's clouds are obscuring our view, but the sunshine is still always there. The thread is always present. I just had a little example of the taste of the thread today as I was preparing for the talk. And then I want to hear from, what is the thread for you? So I was in Old Soul Cafe in Oak Park on Broadway. Some of you may know that place. And there was a man who had come in, and I could see he was struggling, physically struggling, and he was shaking. I don't know what his, you know, health situation was. And he had some cuts on his chin, and he suddenly apologized to me. I think he was so used to apologizing because he's kind of maybe tripping over himself or spilling things on people or that sort of thing. And he apologized and said, "No, everything is totally fine. You know, there's nothing to apologize for. It's all great." And then about 10 minutes later, I suddenly felt coffee on my legs and on my shorts. And I don't buy a lot of clothes. and they were white shorts, and had some coffee on them. And then again, he just kind of did what he's very familiar with. He apologized profusely. I went up to him and I said, I'm really happy that you're here today. Really happy that you're here today. And I try to be kind with that. I certainly set the intention of being kind and compassionate with people. But the way that came out of me was Susan. I had been immersed in Susan, and that was Susan going up and just saying, I'm really happy that you're here today. And he just had this very sweet look, you know, that he gave me back. I think that was pretty unexpected. So that's how the thread, I think, can work if we stayed tuned in and mindful and open-hearted, and we live from that place. So I'm wondering just some of your own thoughts on what the thread is for you. What is the thread for you? Go, random Jim.
Thank you, Andy. I get these emails from Elizabeth Warren. And she has these. She has a motto, I think, and it says, "She persisted." And for me, that's Susan. It's like Susan is someone, is like a boat with like a 10-horse motor, you know, really, really, just, you know, going up the stream, but it never runs out of gas. It never, you know, it's always just persisting, just going ahead with such integrity. You know, Susan has such integrity, and when she sets her goal, she just, you know, I know there can be a lot of chaos going on around her, like in meetings and that sort of thing. And I was in a lot of meetings with Susan as we, you know, tried to steer the course up this stream to make this place happen. And Susan was just there, never letting go of the thread, always just steady, steady, steady. And really, it was that kind of that steady energy that made this place happen. That energy. There were a lot of us that had, like, you know, 50 horse motors, and we were ready to go, boom. But it was the steady, just slow persistence that really made it happen.
Thank you, Jim. What is the thread for you? What is the thread you take away from Susan?
I really like pesto, and I like to make it myself with basil. And Susan had a lot of basil in her backyard and had said, "There's all this basil." And I was like, cool, because I can't really grow much. I don't have a garden per se. So I went with my shears in hand and a bag to cut down whatever basil she would give me. And it was like the end of the season, I thought. So I thought, I will go to town on the basil, because she said, go to town. That's what I heard. So, and her daughter was there. And I was going to town on the basil. And she kind of went, What is your intention here? I mean, I think literally that's what she said. And I was like, well, Susan said I could cut some basil. And she's like, but you're cutting some. And anyway, it was clear I had gone too far in her mind. So I kind of started to back off, and I tried to be a little more gentle. And Susan took me aside, and she said, you know, I think I've forgotten her daughter's name now.
Katie,
just, she's feeling like a mama bear, and she's feeling kind of protective. So, you know, don't take what she's saying to heart too much. And I was like, okay, got it. But not really, I guess, because I could tell she was kind of mad. And so I don't know if it was that day or later, Susan came to me again and said, you know, I really hope you're not... she said, you're not carrying any more residue about what happened yesterday. It's totally fine. And I was like, wow, you know, she really didn't need to say that. Mm-hmm. You know, she'd already done her thing. So that unconditional acceptance and forgiveness and, like you said, holding on to the thread, that was a great life lesson.
Thank you. Raphael, do you want to?
Well, at one of the most trying and sensitive times of my life, coming here to Sacramento Dharma Center and not knowing how this would be, or whether I would be accepted or rejected. And so when there were moments when I wanted to retreat and isolate, there appeared a very light moment in my life through the eyes and heart and words of Susan Orr. And she exemplified what I consider the jewel of the Buddha Dharma Sangha. She's emblematic of loving kindness that seeps through the Buddha Dharma Sangha. And she reached out to me in the most tender, loving way as a reassurance that I'm in the right place and that there is love here. And she showed me what that love felt like. It wasn't but a few weeks ago at one of those moments when I needed someone, and there she appeared in body, in spirit, in heart, in love. And she showed me that there is a way to get through these hard times in life. She showed me that I don't have to give up. And so she reminds me of a butterfly that flutters in and out of sight, but always appearing at a moment when my sight or my vision would be wandering somewhere else. Then the butterfly appears and brings into sight the presence of something very beautiful. And so I think of Susan, and her presence is here right now. And I think of maybe a silk thread that weaves its way in and throughout our hearts, connecting us and bringing us together, especially in moments that are difficult and hard, as it is now for her. But the reassurance is that we're all connected.
Thank you.
We're all connected.
Thank you, Rafael. One of you. Thank you.
Susan's thread is very clear, and she's had many years to make it strong and indelible, and I'm so grateful for that, and I'm so grateful to know her, and it's for me, like, I'm not quite sure what my thread is, and looking at her and looking at her life is the call for me to be really clear about what my thread is, and to look deeper and to work a little bit harder because it's worth it. And to see the kind of impact that she has had, and that she continues to have and will continue to have when her body's gone, it is a strong call for me to do the work of finding my thread and knowing that, it's there and that it's, it is valuable. And I don't want to I'll save it for her. Yeah, that's all.
Thank you. Other people? couple more people.
Knowing that she meant, I'm having a little bit of feedback on the speaker. Knowing that she was intending on being here and having spoken with her and talked about David, and she talked about David being her first teacher years before Buddhism was even a reality for her, I heard that it's okay not to know where you're going with this. She talked about the struggle of finding relief and finding her way. And so I heard in that poem that journey, and that people don't often understand that you're going forward and trying to find your way. And it's strange. Buddhism and meditation has been a 20-year journey for me, and I don't know why I was brought on this path or what my thread is, but it's okay. Because as you go along and deepen your commitment, it all starts to fall away. And that's so, you know, she asked me to be on the Dharma Center board when she was going off. She called me specifically, and I went, uh-oh, she's calling me to service. And of course, I answered that call, you know. So I don't know. I have had, between her and Helen and me, we've solved the problems of the world in email. So, yeah, I, like I said, that's my three. It feels similar. I'm walking forward. It's not exactly clear. Sometimes my family doesn't understand it. They appreciate the impact, but it's okay. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Susan.
Thank you.
So I had the occasion to work with Susan over the years in a number of different roles. But the one that sticks in my mind and has always been kind of a beacon for me was one of the first volunteer assignments I had at SBMG was as a coordinator of a retreat. It was a retreat with that Reb Anderson. It was about 20 years ago. The first time I'd ever coordinated a retreat. At that time, we didn't have any like written instructions or anything on how to conduct a retreat. And things got kind of complicated unexpectedly. It turned out that the venue was not going to be available at the last minute, and there were other complications. And I don't know exactly how it happened, but somehow Susan was at my side. And she was never actually telling me what to do or what I should be looking at, but she was always just there. And and it happened because of her. We were able to pull it together. And just the way she approached that, with just being there, just her presence, was a lesson for me then. I knew it was a lesson then, and it has been ever since. It's been part of my own practice. And that's the way she's been the whole time since, too. So I'm really glad that we got to be with her.
Thank you, Oscar.
I think Susan might suggest to us if you turned around, you would see many people on that thread. Raphael talked about it being our interconnectedness and a tapestry, a very rich, deep, lovely, warm, inviting, embracing tapestry that Susan wove with each and every one of us, and that just is the Susan-ness, the suchness of Susan.
Thank you, Julia.
I'm going to try. 3 years ago, when I started going to the other Dharma Center, my first workshop was with Susan. And it was the Four Immeasurables. And I fell in love with the way she talked and she thought. And I wanted to keep going, and I wanted to be, or close to be, like she was. She inspired me to keep going. I was going through a really hard time with my children. Now I understand how and why she understood that. My son back then, well, still, is an addict. So she completely understands. And when she listened to me, she made me feel accepted and loved. But still, she says, you need to take care of yourself first. He needs to take care of himself. Send him some meta. Do what you need to do, but take care of yourself first. She taught me how to live at the moment and the present. And she was love. She is love. And she always spread her love around. Her wings were big. And touched many, many lives.
Thank you.
Over here. I met Susan by way of art. And I did two things with her that stay with me every day. One is she passed out matchbook boxes and materials. And the lesson was that you can make art out of anything. I still have my box. I see it all the time, and I put little treasures in it. Susan's message just lasted. The other thing I did with her is take a class in which we made bowls of compassion. That involved writing down your sources of suffering on a piece of paper, burning it, gathering the ashes and working them into clay with your own hands, and then fashioning a bowl from that. And then they were fired. We came back the next week and painted them. Well, that's a container for all my malas. And for me, it's the essence of Susan and the power of her ability to communicate to people in very lasting, very wise ways. And she always had a radiant smile. I just love her.
I think Inger. Yeah, Inger.
Oh, sorry. About a year ago, I was hospitalized at Sutter, and I had pneumonia, and I had a heart attack at home and a heart attack at the hospital, and I didn't feel like having visitors, so I was crabby and I was sick, and so Susan came to visit me even after I told her I don't want any visitors, and it was Cindy came with her, and since I was in isolation, they had to dress all up, and I was smiling at them, and all of a sudden we started giggling, and we didn't stop giggling the whole time they were there. And it was such a beautiful light moment in that visit. And I just treasure it because it just lifted me. And it meant so much to have them come to visit, but also to be light and giggly. It was fun.
Thank you. Maybe one more, and then, okay, yes, Mary, great.
Hi, everybody. One of the things that I've been thinking about all day today was, what did Susan bring to me in practice? Like, what did I get from Susan? And all of you have done these beautiful, beautiful memories of her. And one of the things that I have been thinking about all day and sending to her is the Awakening Joy class that she created for us. And Andy and Susan and I used to drive down to hear James Braz occasionally. And then she created, I don't know which came first, whether it was the class or driving down there, but it all was very joyful. I mean, we would ride down sometimes laughing the whole time or driving back talking about Dharma. But the Awakening Joy class just brought joy to me. And she said the reason that she chose James Braz as her teacher is because he was joyful. And they've, you know, had many years of practice together. But one day I was walking, I was a school social worker, and I was walking in the around the corner, and I found myself singing at work. And I was like, that's it. They've awakened my joy. It's here. And every time I find myself singing, I think about the class that she brought to us. James and Susan brought this joy to us. So the thread for me is joy in the Dharma, bringing that joy into your life. And she helped me to do that. So thank you.
Thank you so much, Mary. I would love to continue with another poem that, okay,
I'm sorry.
To make it brief, I'm sorry. But
just real brief.
Thank you.
The young lady was here a few minutes ago, informed me that there's a car running outside on the street with the lights on, the keys in the ignition. It's a dark gray Honda Civic. Anybody here? Yeah. No? Okay, good. Sorry to trouble you.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I'm going to read a poem called The Turtle. And I have copies of it for everyone that you can have as we head out. I'd be happy to hand copies. I think I've made a copy for everybody. So this is a poem by Mary Oliver. And as I think I had mentioned, when Susan told me about this poem, she said, again, very, very little voice left. She said, "That's me. I'm the turtle." And she said, "This is the anthem of my life, this poem." So the turtle breaks from the blue-black skin of the water, dragging her shell with its mossy scutes across the shallows and through the rushes and over the mudflats to the uprise, to the yellow sand, to dig with her ungainly feet a nest and hunker there, spewing her white eggs down into the darkness. And you think of her patience, her fortitude, her determination to complete what she was born to do. And then you realize a greater thing. She doesn't consider what she was born to do. She's only filled with an old blind wish. It isn't even hers, but came to her in the rain or soft wind, which is a gate through which her life keeps walking. She can't see herself apart from the rest of the world, or the world from what she must do every spring, crawling up the high hill, luminous under the sand that is packed against her skin. She doesn't dream. She knows she is part of the pond she lives in. The tall trees are her children. The birds that swim above her are tied to her by an unbreakable string. So I'll read this another time. Again, as Susan said, the anthem of my life, or that's me, kind of the last spark of joy that I made contact with from her. And it really has the title, The Turtle, and then it just moves into the verb. Breaks from the blue-black skin of the water, dragging her shell with its mossy scutes across the shallows and through the rushes and over the mudflats to the uprise, to the yellow sand, to dig with her ungainly feet a nest, and hunker there, spewing her white eggs down into the darkness. And you think of her patience, her fortitude, her determination to complete what she was born to do. And then you realize a greater thing. She doesn't consider what she was born to do. She's only filled with an old blind wish. It isn't even hers, but came to her in the rain or soft wind, which is a gate through which her life keeps walking. She can't see herself apart from the rest of the world, or the world from what she must do every spring, crawling up the high hill, luminous under the sand that is packed against her skin. She doesn't dream. She knows she is part of the pond she lives in. The tall trees are her children. The birds that swim above her are tied to her by an unbreakable string. I just had a couple of words and then love to hear some of your thoughts. I just, reading this, and there was no really opportunity for discussion of it other than the words that I told you and how she felt like they characterized her life. I just thought the grace with which she has walked in the middle way, just her life has been about grace even in the midst of those conflicts or those difficulties or those choppy waters. And that middle way between effort and no effort. On some level, she, you know, had that steady effort that Jim was talking about, just dogged. And yet it was effortless because she was just aligned with love and what was needed and what was the skillful response in any given moment. And in a lot of ways, that's the way, in a lot of manners, that's the way she's approached her declining health. Really never declared that I'm in the process of dying. Never used the language, and many of us use this language, this isn't a criticism, but she didn't go for the language of I'm fighting cancer. It's like cancer is here, cancer is visiting. Sometimes I ask cancer to just, life is pretty good, just take a break for a while, give me some time, you know. Just give me a little bit of time. Maybe you want to even take off. That would be sweet. That would be sweet too. And that kind of grace, and again that all that effort, but yet it seemed on a certain level effortless. Not to say that sometimes she would feel overwhelmed. I did have talks with her a couple times about, you know, oh my God, I'm committed in so many different arenas and it just feels like it's too much right now. But even there, not to say we all get overwhelmed and Susan would get overwhelmed, but then just kind of this graceful way of finishing one particular activity. And again, with, as Jim said, with integrity, wrapping up maybe a group she was involved in or an activity that she realized she couldn't maintain while she was as well doing something else. So just wondering about that effort and no effort. One of the part of the Eightfold Path is around wise effort. And I just, as I read that poem, I thought that's what Susan really embodied, wise effort. Yes, Helen.
To reflect on the question about effort, there's a saying that you'll probably recognize in describing the compassion of Kuan Yin. It's like reaching for a pillow in the middle of the night. That was Susan.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And Helen is...
Yeah.
Yes.
Go ahead. Yeah. it's hard to find words, but I'll just offer this sweetness from what you've been saying, Andy. Although I felt, well, like many of us, very close to Susan. She was truly a sister in the Dharma and in our family life and in so many ways of resonating together. But I haven't seen her for a month. And we were going to get together next week or the week after. And one thing she said to me a number of times over these months of illness was that she felt grateful that we didn't need to get together. It was that connection or understanding that we were already together, but I did not want to add to her needing to be cordial, which I guess is part of her inbuilt love, and that I could send her pictures of my grandchildren and my travels, and she would come along with that and just be glad about that strange kind of effort, of effortless effort in friendship. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks Thank for you. Bringing it up.
Thank you. Yes.
I had an experience with Susan actually just shortly after the founding of the SDC here. I'm not sure how many people know it per se, but I'm one of the people that has chemical and fragrance sensitivities here, so I have a lot of challenges being in a group of people this close, actually. But she knew that, and when we moved over here, I wasn't really sure I was going to be able to be part of this group anymore. And for whatever reason, we found ourselves in a fairly close setting one time, and she was concerned about that, and she asked me, you know, I can only imagine right after this was founded, there's probably a lot of financial problems, a lot of challenges related to this setup. But she was concerned that I wouldn't be able to be part of this and that maybe other people like me wouldn't be able to be part of this. And I thought that was really telling because, you know, I mean, this is, from what everyone said, a pretty, you know, great thing to have accomplished. But even in the process of doing great things, she was making sure that people weren't being excluded from it. So I thought that was, a very holistic, I guess, view of how to move forward in life.
Thank you. Anyone else? Yes. You're going to be brave.
I'm going to be brave. I just loved Susan so much. She was so much fun. She was such an authentic friend, person. She didn't always think everything was perfect. But she was always real. She was always genuine. And she loved lots of butter on her popcorn. She liked to have popcorn and opera together. Not everybody can say that. She delighted my life. Thank you.
Thank you.
You had asked about, and she had asked about threads, and pardon me. What comes to me is I'm thinking of her goodwill and her vision and that steadiness. What is it they said about Thich Nhat Hanh? He was a mix of a butterfly and a piece of heavy machinery. And I think there was a third part in that, but I feel inspired to try to maintain goodwill. And to have vision, but not to push things through, but to take that more of a Taoist way of finding the open doors. That'll be a challenge for me.
Thank you, Terry. I think Maureen.
There was a decision I needed to make once, and Susan listened to me talk it out. And if any of you have had the privilege of having Susan listen, you know that she's right there with you, and she won't tell you what to do. But what she invited me to consider was that not just with big decisions, but all the time, we're feeling around in the dark, and we don't know where we're going next. And she reminded me that if I trust in my practice, that's the best thing I can do. And because she trusted me to trust in my practice, I was able to trust in myself and my practice.
I think what you touched on was also part of her dying process, her living with so much illness. As many of you know, she had a cancer diagnosis, an episode, and four different really separate incidents throughout her life. Life was so much about uncertainty. And this is such a beautiful practice because ultimately it's all about embracing uncertainty, living with uncertainty, not as the enemy, but as the reality that we accept, right? And that we live within and find a way within. And I think that's so much of what has given her the peace. That's what she really wanted to, one element she wanted to communicate today was just how she came to terms with her illness and the degree of peace that she's experienced and living with that uncertainty. And you know, where she's going next or what she's going to look like or how she's going to be manifest is also that great unknown. Right? And she's at this point really just ready to enter that. Anyone else? I think there was one more. Yes.
After you read the poem of the turtle, I couldn't help but think of a painting that I did some years ago, and it's a painting of a turtle with a huge dragon over the top of the turtle, kind of, and it's called "Ode to Be a Dragon," and after a different poem, actually, but after that poem, I mean, and then at some point I thought, no, the title shouldn't be "Ode to Be a Dragon." It should be "Happy Being a Turtle," and so I think of Susan as such a beautiful combination of that, of the wisdom of the dragon and the, you know, the patience of the turtle. That's she was such an inspiration to me. So, thank you. As she was too, I know a lot of other people.
Thank you. So I think it's time for us to close. So I'd like to dedicate the merit of the beautiful thoughts and images and memories and inspirations that we've had of Susan, and that we carry the intention of bringing forth these lessons, this heart, this turtle nature, out into the world to reduce suffering for people within this, in our immediate environment, within Sacramento, throughout this troubled country, and beyond into the world. Thank you.